Blog Talk Radio.
How's it going, everybody? It is Chris Block here, the Third Man Ian Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. Monday night, September the 26th, 2011, 9:01 here in Chicago. And thanks, everybody, for joining us. We got a special guest on the line tonight. We're going to be previewing. I think everybody who listens to this show knows that one of my favorite teams to watch. I have a little love affair with the Los Angeles Kings. And to help us preview the Kings tonight, the mayor of mayorsmanor.com. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I think people that were with us last year remember that we had you on detailing the Kings last year, and it was a great show, so we're looking forward a lot to tonight. Why don't we start off, it seems like everywhere you look, you know, everyone's very, very high on the Kings, obviously the big trade this summer going out and acquiring Mike Richards. A quality center on any team in hockey, and it gives the LA Kings an excellent 1-2 punch up down the middle, and then Jarrett Stahl presumably at the third spot. So the Kings look stocked there. A lot of people really excited about this team. Now, what about in LA? It seems like abroad, the Kings are, you know, the early darlings of the Western Conference. What about in LA? What's the temperature right now? Give us the temperature of the fan base. Is the expectation level there right now? Is it not just a playoff round win? Is it potentially a Western Conference final appearance? What are the expectations right now for the fan base of the LA Kings?
Yeah, the expectations are absolutely high, and I would say that they've actually become higher in just the last couple of weeks. You know, fans have grown accustomed to hearing the we're going to try to make the playoffs this year, you know, and that's our focus speech over the last couple of years. When you go out and you make a trade for a guy like Mike Richards, who, you know, is a winner all around, like you were just talking about, I mean, here's a guy who's been in the Stanley Cup Finals. He's won at the AHL level. He's won in the Olympics. He's won, you know, in junior hockey. When you add a player of that talent, plus Simone Gagné and some of the other pieces that they put in place coming into camp, the expectations were higher. And then all of a sudden, when the Kings had their Hockey Fest, which is their annual, you know, get-together with their fan base as training camp opens in early September, you had players from the captain, Dustin Brown, on down talking about, you know, much, much greater heights. They were talking about winning the Western Conference and, you know, sort of Stanley Cup or bust was the talk. And that ratcheted things up even another notch. And to show you just how excited the fan base is, all you really have to do is look around Staples Center for the last couple of preseason games here. The building was pretty full, and there was a definite buzz. And, heck, even the traffic at my website has been through the roof here over the last couple of weeks with training camp open like we've never seen it before. So, yes is the answer. The fan base is definitely excited and eager to get this season started.
And the season, of course, begins when do the Kings leave for Sweden? Is that this Friday?
They're actually even for Germany. They leave Saturday around midnight. They play a game Friday night in Anaheim, then they play Saturday in Las Vegas, their annual game against the Colorado Avalanche, a series called Frozen Fury. And immediately following the game there in Las Vegas, they'll be leaving that night, Saturday night, headed over to Germany. They play a preseason game early next week over in Hamburg, and then they go to Stockholm to open the season against the Rangers before they play Buffalo in Berlin, and then they come back home to the U.S.
Now, obviously, the big story, you know, as excited as everybody is about the LA Kings, the big story that is going to have quite the impact until it is resolved is Drew Doughty. I guess, what's the latest? You know, I'm got in front of me right now a Los Angeles Times report today. I guess the Kings owner came out today in support of Dean Lombardi. The published report here says the speculation is the offer that the Kings have out is annually at about $6.8 million, to whereas Doughty's looking for seven, maybe a little bit more than seven in a shorter term. What's the latest on Doughty, and where does it stand right now in this contract negotiation?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. You see all of these reports that float around online, and the majority of them are bogus. The report you're referring to there, that's Helene Elliott. You know, she's in the Hall of Fame. So when she writes something, you know, people should pay attention as that being from a credible source. And certainly her conversation with Tim Leiwicki, he points to exactly what's going on in the negotiations. There is some speculation, of course, that there's they're, you know, $300,000 apart or so. And, you know, what you're talking about there is that Lombardi has kind of said that he doesn't want, you know, to pay any player more than what Andre Kopitar is making. And he's, you know, just a couple hundred thousand under $7 million. And supposedly the Doughty camp there is looking to be paid, you know, more than $7 million a year. You also get into the term as well, because there's a couple different ways to go with this. If you sign him to a five-year deal, you could have him coming up for free agency around the same time as Andre Kopitar, which is, you know, a whole host of problems down the road. The Kings would probably prefer to buy down some of those free agent years. That's why earlier in the summer there was a longer-term deal that was presented to Doughty and to his camp there. And according to basically what Leiwicki was saying in the article, if the Kings made a mistake, quote unquote, in these negotiations, it was the fact that they went hard early on with sort of their best offer. And so they weren't there to really negotiate and play a high low game, you know, where they go high and another guy's side goes low, and they go low and the other side goes high and they try to meet in the middle. Leiwicki's position was, look, you know, Dean Lombardi wanted to get this deal done early, and he wanted to get it done so that he could move on to other things. The Kings had a lot of pieces in play this summer, including going after Brad Richards, of course, who ultimately landed in New York. But the Kings wanted to get that deal done, and so they were willing to go, you know, long-term, somewhere close to $7 million a year, and they were looking to go in terms of a length of contract, you know, over 7 years. It is definitely a frustrating situation, you know, not only for the fan base, but also for management as well. The interesting thing is that for the players and from a management standpoint, they've really started to put it behind them in terms of it's not dominating the news. It's not dominating the headlines here with camp opening up over the last week. Of course, it was the hot topic the first day that camp opened. Coach Terry Murray came out and said that it's not going to change his plans or his approach to training camp. And all of the players basically said that, you know, of course they missed him. They wished he was there. He's a great guy. He's a good friend. He's a good teammate. They understand that it's business. And they've all just kind of moved forward. It has not dominated the talk at training camp here over the last week or so.
That being said, there's some pretty strong language in this article in the LA Times today, where Leiwicki basically starts to play a card here against Drew Doughty, where he says, more importantly, this is a quote, tell me which player we're now starting to carve this $300,000 or $400,000 out of. And then he goes, continues to say, so who is it on this team we look back or look at and say, we just gave Drew your extra money because $6.8 million wasn't good enough. And then he says, that's not good for team chemistry. So he's clearly playing a hand here. At what point does this get ugly? And, you know, I mean, at a certain point, I mean, Doughty's going to get his money and he'll be back. But at what point, we've seen that, and the reason why I ask this is because Blackhawks fans would know all about this, longtime Blackhawks fans, because the strategy that Dean Lombardi's trying to employ here of identifying a player and saying, we're not going to pay any more than $6.8 million that Anze, that's a strategy that the Blackhawks in the 90s tried to use with Chris Chelios, and, you know, after Jeremy Roenick left. And, you know, it's a snowball rolling downhill, to whereas, I mean, at what point does the relationship, even if they become, you know, they come together, they agree, and they move forward, at what point does the relationship between Drew Doughty and the team, and maybe even more importantly, Drew Doughty and the fan base and that expectation that, you know, he'll have on his shoulders coming back, at what point does that get worn and adversely affect Drew Doughty and the LA Kings?
Yeah, you know, a great question that most people, or I would say just about everybody, doesn't really have a good answer for, although I could add a couple of things to it and say that, you know, first of all, the fan base is starting to turn against Doughty. Early on, it was pointed towards Lombardi, and it was, you know, hurry up and get this guy signed. And as the information has started to come out, and they've talked about the fact that they've put this great offer out there for him to sign, and when they've explained their position, like in this article here that you're talking about, you know, it's about allocating money to all the players and team chemistry. Dean Lombardi has been very clear. He's probably one of the most transparent general managers in the entire National Hockey League, if not all of major sports. It's absolutely amazing if you ever sit down and listen to what Lombardi says when he talks in terms of long-form interviews. And he's done a lot of them, especially with the Kings season ticket holders and with the fan base, with his State of the Franchise forums and things like that. He's been very clear from day one in terms of what he wanted to do and how he wanted to build this team. And he was going to build from the net out, and then he was going to go to the defensemen and move ultimately to the forwards. And it was all about team chemistry. And the famous quote that he loved to talk about was how he wanted guys that were willing to get the King's crest tattooed on their ass. That's his famous quote. And, you know, Dustin Brown was the first guy to get the tattoo. And then you move on through the line and you look at these deals that they've given players, whether it's Jack Johnson, whether it's Kopitar, Dustin Brown, they want to lock up their core. And what Lombardi has been insisted upon from the very beginning is that once they identify who these core players are, they want them locked up long term and they want them playing together as a unit, because they don't just want to win once. They want to, he's never used the word dynasty, at least that I can recall, but he's talked about winning on a consistent basis over a number of years. So it's not about Stanley Cup or bust this year. It's not about going out and getting a Mike Richards and getting all these guys to make a run for it this year and getting to the Western Conference Finals or making it to the Stanley Cup Finals and winning one time and then dismantling the team, a la what the Blackhawks had to go through a few years ago. He wants to go and build a winner that's going to be there on a consistent basis over a long period, like the Detroit Red Wings, as an example. And in order to do that, he does need to have a sense of team and a sense of chemistry, and he needs to have guys, you know, all feeling that they're in it together, so that you don't have certain players making, you know, a lot more than other players, especially among your core. Doughty is a generational player, as they like to say. He's a special player, like a Kopitar, and so they're going to give them a little bit more than they would some of the other guys. But if you go through that article again from Helene Elliott in the LA Times today, and you look at what they're talking about, they're positioning this as a problem with Drew Doughty's agent. Dean Lombardi, Leiwicki, the coach, everybody else, they've all been very complimentary towards Drew Doughty and what a great player he is and how much they want him to be part of the team. And little chips here and there at the agent. And, you know, that right now is the issue. What it's going to become long-term, you know, whether Doughty stands up and starts to make a decision for himself, or whether he backs his agent in this fight remains to be seen. But, you know, the team is leaving for Europe here on Saturday, and kind of the prevailing thought in Los Angeles right now is that in order for Doughty to be part of the opening night roster, he needs to be signed to a contract by probably Wednesday of this week, maybe Thursday, you know, or Friday morning at the latest. But he really needs to get a deal done here in the next 72 hours to start to put this behind him and be ready for the opening night, you know, over in Europe.
I want to point out before we continue on and we get too far into this and I forget, you could follow the mayor at on Twitter, Mayor NHL is your tag, and then also on Facebook, Facebook.com/Mayor's Manor and at mayorsmanor.com. You know, I want to talk about the defense of the Kings, and especially in the interim here with Drew Doughty out. I mean, what I love most about this Kings team for a while now is its defense. I mean, fully assembled, they can do it all. You know, they're better than average passing. They have elite puck rushers, smash your mouth cage guarders. You know, the Kings D can play basically any way you want it. You know, beat your ass with a smile and make a sandwich while they're doing it, kind of a defense core. How does this D right now shake out in the interim without Drew Doughty? Has Terry Murray played his hand yet as far as what the pairings are going to be? And I know that there's three prospects still in camp. A guy that you actually brought up last year, I believe, when we talked, was Andrew Campbell. Thomas Hickey, who's been with the organization for a while now, and Vyacheslav Voinev. What's this D looking like right now as we head into as we're on the verge of the season?
Yeah, we started camp here in Los Angeles with a number of defensemen, including some camp invitees, and the way that things have really boiled down is in talking to Coach Terry Murray, the big three in terms of prospects would be Jake Muzzin, Thomas Hickey, and Voinoff that you mentioned there. And unfortunately, Muzzin was kind of the odd man out within that group of three because he's a little bit limited offensively compared to the other two. It's taking nothing away from Jake Muzzin. He's a great player, and you know, he's going to be in the National Hockey League here in the not-too-distant future. Big guy as well and brings a physical edge to his game. But in terms of who's going to replace Doughty, Coach Murray has said that he's leaning towards Voinoff. Voinoff has more experience on the power play. He's a right-handed shot, and he just sees him sliding in there a little bit easier than Thomas Hickey. At the same time, Murray has been complimentary of Hickey, really likes the way that his game has advanced over the last year, and he played pretty well in the opening game of the preseason at home at Staples Center, and Murray said today as well that he's willing to carry eight defensemen to start the season as well. So there's a possibility that you could see Hickey and Voinoff both make the team if this, you know, Drew Doughty situation was to drag on for a few more weeks.
And for our listeners, the Kings see it when Doughty's in the lineup and when you have the whole group there. It's Willie Mitchell, Drew Doughty, Scuderi, Rob Scuderi, and Jack Johnson, Alec Martinez, Matt Green, Davis Jeriski, and then, you know, the guys you're talking about, Hickey and Voinoff. The guys there that I don't think many people around the league really know about. Tell us a little bit more about Alec Martinez and the progressions that he made last year and where he fits in his importance to that defense corps right now.
Yeah, just to kind of merge back to your other question as well, you know, how good is the defense as a unit? I've said many times over the last few months, and I'll say again here, in my opinion, the Kings have the best defensive unit in terms of six guys together in the entire Western Conference. And sure, there might be better defensemen that people could single out individually or maybe a better pair here and there. But if you're talking about a unit 1 through 6, I'll take the Kings defensive 1 through 6 up against anybody in the Western Conference. They're solid. And when you look at, you know, how they supported their goalie in terms of a goals against average last year, I think the numbers kind of speak to themselves. But Alec Martinez, you know, is a real nice surprise. Here's a kid who was called up from Manchester in November of last year and played well from the first game forward and really earned a spot, and the Kings rewarded him with the contract, you know, this summer. And that's quite the accomplishment because, again, it also ties back to the earlier question that you asked there. Alec Martinez is there in the mix, and they have other kids, the Jake Muzzins and the Thomas Hickeys, et cetera, that were fighting for a spot and that potentially could have made the team here in Los Angeles this year, but instead Martinez locked up his spot. What he brings is a little more offense to a defense that is first and foremost under Coach Terry Murray, defensive-minded. You know, Jack Johnson's going to give you some offense. Drew Doughty's going to give you some offense. You know, Willie Mitchell's going to pitch in a little bit offensively, but he's not going to give you big numbers. Matt Green, Rob Scuderi, you know, those are your stay-at-home defensemen. Those are guys that aren't going to put up a lot of points. And Alec Martinez in the sixth spot, he does give you some help, you know, with the power play when needed. He can jump in there. And Alec Martinez has a great shot from the point as well. And he's trying out some different sticks in camp right now, going back and forth between some Eastons and some Bowers, he said on Mayor's Manor earlier in the week. So we'll see where it shakes out. But Alec Martinez is a nice player and is a nice surprise for the Kings since he was called up last November.
Getting far ahead of ourselves here, because again, Drew Doughty's going to get his contract settled, and everything will be fine. But let's just say this thing drags out, or it gets really, really ugly, and you're talking about maybe moving a guy like Drew Doughty again. Just hypothetical. Let's talk about Jack Johnson for a second, and where he's at. Jack Johnson at one point thought of to be a guy in the, you know, like a Drew Doughty, who's your power play quarterback. He's everything to your team on both ends of the ice. Kind of, you know, progressed slow there, but last year turned a corner a little bit. Is Jack Johnson, is he a guy who can become, you know, your first pair guy that could play in all situations, 26 minutes a night, or is he best suited, is he kind of moving into that position as a second pair, a guy, not your spotlight guy, but your maybe your number three guy on the defense? Where is Jack Johnson, and where do you see him progressing as we move into this season with his new contract, new 7-year deal?
Yeah, Jack signed that 7-year deal, back in January. And interestingly enough, he negotiated that deal on his own. And he joked earlier in camp, and we had the quotes on Twitter. You mentioned earlier, twitter.com/MayorNHL. Jack joked that he offered to do Doughty's deal for free if he decided to go a different direction with his agent. But yeah, Jack negotiated his own deal because he wants to know where he's going to play, and he wants to be in Los Angeles for a long time. And so he was able to get that deal done quickly with GM Dean Lombardi. Where Jack fits in, Jack was never projected to be a Drew Doughty type player. However, people have often dreamed of the day when Jack and Drew can be paired together, especially coming out of the Olympics. Even Coach Terry Murray put them together as the top defensive unit. I think as Jack Johnson proved when he was with Team USA at the Olympics back in Vancouver, he can log those minutes, those large minutes every night, and he can be counted on to be defensively responsible as well as put up the points. Jack's offensive numbers slipped a little bit in the second half of last year. He did put up 42 points total, which was his most, in the NHL, his short NHL career, that is. He made his debut at the end of 07, but really became a full-time player in the 2007-2008 season. But his 5 goals were a little bit less than he scored over the previous 2 years when he had 8 goals and 6 goals. Jack acknowledges that, most of his points are going to come on the power play. Fans like to make a big deal out of his plus minus, but we had Jack on earlier in the week as well, and he talked a little bit about the fact that he really doesn't care about his plus minus. It's not something he loses sleep over. He instead focuses on what the coaches tell him, and if they continue to put him in big situations, that's fine with him. Coach Terry Murray also had some comments about it as well, but Murray's a big fan of Jack Johnson. He believes in Jack, and he believes that when he has Johnson playing the right way, which he thinks is a physical game where he's taking it to players, that he believes that Jack is a key component of the defense. Murray was asked actually yesterday at camp as well if there's a little bit of concern if this Doughty situation was to extend for quite some time. Is there a concern that Jack might take it upon himself to, elevate his game or try to elevate his game and replace Doughty? And is there a problem or a concern or a worry about that? And Terry Murray said, no, absolutely not. That's what we want from a player like Jack Johnson, is we want them to seize those opportunities. And so there doesn't really seem to be concern that Jack's going to be out of his element. There seems to actually be some excitement about the upside that Johnson can bring to the team this year. And Jack tends to be one of those players that the bigger the game, the better he plays, similar to Doughty. It's something they have in common. And again, we saw what Jack Johnson is capable of, during the Olympics. And then also the way that Jack had a slow or disappointing second half of last season, but boy, did he turn it on in the playoffs as well. So everything's fine in the land of Jack Johnson, I would say.
What about the, Willie Mitchell? I was reading online the other day about has sore groin, maybe issues a little bit in camp. Where is he at in his health and, of course, the past concussion issues?
Yeah, Willie Mitchell said that he was nursing a sore groin the other day after practice, but he told me that it was nothing to worry about. It's just kind of normal stuff that happens around this time of year because of how hard they go skating, coming out of the summer. So Willie Mitchell is, when he's in the lineup, he's a difference maker. He has a big long stick, and he's good at getting the pucks off the other player's stick. And Willie Mitchell makes a difference, out there on the ice. He brings a veteran leadership, a presence as well. Interesting year for Willie Mitchell. I'm going to have a big article with him up here in the next couple of days. I just did an extensive interview with him about his contract situation. And, this is the second year of a 2-year deal that he signed. It was a little bit risky when the Kings signed him. He was coming off that concussion there in Vancouver. He hadn't played for a number of months. And the Kings gave him a 2-year deal. He performed admirably last year. Unfortunately, he did miss a number of games due to some injuries along the way. But this is the second year of a contract with Willie Mitchell, and if possible, he'd like to remain with the LA Kings.
Just in general, I want to move on to the forwards and how that shakes out here in a second. But just in general, to continue on with the injury discussion now, ex-Blackhawk Colin Frazier and his ankle, where is he at right now physically?
Frazier has just recently started skating in terms of taking physical contact here in the last couple of days. I believe it was Saturday. Sorry, all the days are running together here in camp. But it was Saturday, so 2 days ago he just put away the yellow jersey, which was the no-contact jersey, and was able to participate in full practice. He's on schedule would be the easiest way to put it. He had the surgery there at the end of July. And he's just been, the surgery on his ankle, that is, and he's been, just rehabbing ever since then. He was skating on his own, out on the ice, doing kind of, solo drills just a few weeks ago, and then they worked him into being on the ice with other players, but in a no-contact jersey, and then, like I said, on Saturday, he just now is skating in terms of the full team. Best guess at this point, and this is unofficial, but best guess would be he's going to start the season on IR. He still has some rehabbing to do to get that ankle back, to full strength. And so don't expect him to be on the Kings roster to start the season. And then from there, it's just going to depend on what's happening with the rest of the roster and as well as what's going on with his ankle to determine if they try to find a spot for him in Los Angeles or if most likely he starts the season with Manchester in the AHL.
Well, let's talk about that, I guess, for a second. The grievance with the Edmonton Oilers, and obviously Dean Lombardi went out and traded for Colin Frazier. Has this experience has it soured Lombardi on Frazier, the player, at all? Is it still just strictly an issue with the Oilers? Or did maybe not soured him on Frazier, but maybe did the existence of this injury cause Lombardi to start, a plan B, and now Frazier, by the time he gets back in the lineup, might be the odd man out?
No, I definitely don't believe that Frazier's injury was a big deal, for lack of a better expression, to Dean Lombardi in terms of his overall plan. He likes Frazier. He likes the competitiveness. He's had some nice things to say about Frazier. Has he soured on him? No. Did it cause him to go out and make other moves? No, not really. Some people might point to, a guy like Trent Hunter, who they brought in on a tryout contract. But, Frazier's a center, and Hunter plays on the wing. So it's a little bit of a different situation. There's some familiarity, at least, with Frazier, with a few of the players there as well. So it's always nice to bring a guy in as well that knows some of the guys in the team. It makes things a little bit easier. But, at the very best, Colin Frazier on this team, on this roster, is a third-line player. But even then, as a center, he's really going to be a fourth-line player because the Kings are so deep down the middle with Kopitar, Richards, and Stoll. So, is the answer. I don't really see this entire situation having any negative impact on Colin Frazier, the player, and or his spot in the lineup. Has it done damage to Dean Lombardi and his relationship with the Oilers? Absolutely.
The reason why I ask is one of the things, we'll get into the forwards now, and I guess the only other real injury of note at this point is Kevin Westgarth. Is that the only issue at this point?
Jake Muzzin, who we talked about earlier, he's a little bit banged up. He's not skating right now, and he won't make the trip that Kings are leaving, had left earlier this afternoon for a trip to Kansas City to play the Penguins tomorrow, and then they'll play Colorado, and then they return home on Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Muzzin, who we spoke about, he's banged up. And then, Kevin Westgarth took a punch just under the eye last night in a fight during the game with the Anaheim Ducks, and he... According to Murray today after practice, he has not required x-rays at this point, but they're going to keep him off the ice, and he's not going to be skating here for the next couple of days, and they're going to monitor it and see where it goes from here.
The reason why I asked about Colin Frazier and his place on the team, and I think as we get in, we talk about the forward group now, I think one of the issues that I see with the Kings is their third and fourth line depth, and maybe not depth per se. You got Brad Richardson there. Kyle Clifford is an interesting young kid. Of course, you talked about Trent Hunter vying for a job. Trevor Lewis, Scott Parse, Ethan Moreau comes in is sort of like a veteran to play on that fourth line potentially. It's finding guys. If the third line is going to be a shutdown line, can Richardson and Clifford improve their two-way games? And do you have a defined, at this point, does it look like the Kings have a defined fourth line, or is just every position on that fourth line currently up for grabs?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that's I think that part of the reason people haven't been talking a lot about Doughty here over the last couple of days is that the battle for third and fourth line has really turned into the interesting story in camp, because there's really nothing new to report on the Doughty front, so things have moved on from there. In terms of the third and fourth line, yeah, the Kings came to camp with about, well, 12-plus players, viable players that could be, or that were fighting for those positions. Things have slowly started to whittle away here at the last couple of days. I would say that it started with two surprising cuts, at least in terms of the timing. Two of their top prospects, Brandon Cozen out of the Western Hockey League and Tyler Toffoli out of the Ontario Hockey League. Toffoli coming off 57 goals last year and leading all of junior hockey with those 57 goals. Both of those players were returned or were cut from camp, Toffoli going back to the Ottawa 67s and Cozen being sent back to Manchester here in the last couple of days. And so that was a little bit of a surprise, only in the sense that I think a lot of people, myself included, expected both, if not one of those players, to make it deep into camp and get a long look at that third line right wing spot. Obviously, Coach Murray and Dean Lombardi felt differently, and so those two, you can cross off the list. In terms of how do you plug those six holes, Jared Stoll is locked in at the center position on the third line, and the two other players that definitely have a spot in the lineup would be Kyle Clifford, who you mentioned. You can play him on the third or fourth line left wing. And then Wes Garth, who you mentioned also, is pretty much guaranteed to be one of those guys playing. And he's a fourth line right wing. Of course, Wes Garth might only play about half the games throughout the season. As an example, you don't need to play him against the Red Wings. They don't really carry a heavyweight, but you definitely would play him against, say, Anaheim, who does. Where does it shake out from there? Yeah, Ethan Morrow, you can rotate him on the left side with Kyle Clifford on the third or fourth line. Brad Richardson is a little bit of a rover. He's your utility guy. You can play him in a number of different positions. Murray really liked the way that Richardson was able to elevate his game offensively in the playoffs. He played on a line with Clifford and Wayne Simmonds. And unfortunately, Richardson's defensive game probably wasn't where it needed to be in the playoffs, and that's something that he's going to have to improve if he wants to get more minutes, here in the regular season. But he's a valuable guy to have around because he can play all sorts of different positions. He's also a valuable guy to have around when they play the Colorado Avalanche, who, off the top of my head, I think Richardson has scored 9 out of every 10 of his goals against the Avs. So it's a very interesting battle. And I mentioned Trent Hunter earlier as well. Here's a guy who a lot of people, myself included, when he signed a tryout contract with the Kings, said, why is this guy coming to camp? The Kings have plenty of options there among the bottom six, too many options. But Trent Hunter has looked good. Terry Murray is committed to playing him. He told me today after practice that he's going to play him in at least two or three more of the four preseason games this week before the team leaves for Europe. Hunter's a big guy. He's coming off a knee injury. But what Hunter told me yesterday was that the knee feels great. It's continued to feel fine throughout camp. And for him, the knee has not been swelling, so that's a really good sign after their long and strenuous practices and or games. And it'll be interesting to see if Hunter's able to stick on. Not really sure that there's a spot for him, but coaches, GMs, hockey managers, they're always in love with a big guy. Hunter is a guy who can give you 15 to 20 goals. He's a big player. He can play defensively. Do you really want a player coming off of a knee injury? That's the kind of guy the Kings would have signed 3 years ago to a four-year deal and put him on the top line just because that was the depth in the organization. But now here's a guy who's going to have to come in and fight for everything he has and may only get to play 6 minutes a night if he's even offered a contract.
Yeah, to continue that, I think the reason why I asked that question, I posed those questions because in a salary cap era, every team is going to have its holes, and the Kings are an imperfect team. They're a very, very good team, but they're an imperfect team. And I think for me, the concern looking at this team as presently constructed, of course, whatever they sign Drew Doughty to, they're still going to have, $2.5-3 million left to go, under the cap, maybe a little bit less, but they're going to have money is the point. To go out and improve their team at some point. But if you're looking at it right now and you talk about Brad Richardson, he's a nice player to have on the ice, but if his defensive game is so lacking, my concern for the Kings against the Blackhawks, against the Red Wings, the Sharks, and teams like that, and in a long playoff series, is that they could become a two-line hockey team if they don't have a third line that can step up and challenge other teams' best line to free up your offensive guys. Mike Richards is a brilliant shutdown center if you ask him to do that, but with Dustin Brown and Simone Gagné on his wings, you know, perhaps, you want Mike Richards contributing offense and not always thinking defense first. So you want to have a line there that can you can send out and play those quality minutes. And also with the fourth line, on your bump line, you want to have a, you know, you want to have three guys you can send out there. You can count on to win a faceoff, give you a little bit of energy, and skate 2-3 shifts a period and not cost you anything while they're out there. And I think if the Kings were to have, let's just say, Ethan Moreau on one side, you know, yeah, you got Westgarth there some games, maybe just throwing out names, Lewis or Parse, if whoever ends up being the center, Colin Frazier, if you have a defined role for that line, instead of it just being the guys, like you said, that Terry Murray can't trust shift to shift defensively, those guys get lost in the shuffle and you become a two-line hockey team or maybe a three-line hockey team. And I just don't see how the Kings, as good as they may be up top and on the blue line, obviously in net, I don't see them having ultimate success unless that stuff comes together. You know, would you agree? I mean, your thoughts on that?
I would say that, I mean, I see your point, but I would say that I disagree for a few different reasons. Number one, their third line last year, which was the line we just talked about, the Brad Richardson, Clifford, Simmons line, was probably their best line in the playoffs against San Jose. So they're capable of icing a third line, and you know you still have two of those three components. And believe me when I say that Wayne Simmons, it's sad to see him go, but he wasn't the straw that was stirring the drink in terms of that third line there in the playoffs. And Kyle Clifford certainly elevated his game, and he was a big time player in the OHL, both offensively and defensively and physically as well. And that's a rookie that you're talking about, and so his game is only going to continue to get better. And they have some more veteran components now, like Ethan Morrow, who's been brought up a few times there. And you know, provided that Morrow's healthy, which is a challenge that he's been up against the last couple of seasons, but if he's healthy, you know, he's going to be able to deliver for you in the playoffs. Scott Parse, you know, just to sidetrack a little bit, I'm not sure how much longer Scott Parse is really going to be in the picture in Los Angeles. He is definitely on the hot seat right now. I have some comments from him and from Coach Murray up on mayorsmanor.com that I just posted this afternoon after practice. You know, Scott Parse is having a tough one. He went through hip surgery in November of last year, and he's a guy who has been hyped quite a bit by the organization all the way up to the top. You know, GM Dean Lombardi talked about him having perhaps, you know, top three skill in terms of just skill on the team 2 years ago, and Parse has yet to deliver on that. Terry Murray has been very high on him. And Scott Parse has just really looked invisible, for lack of a better word, I guess, here in the first couple of preseason games. And Coach Murray's been very critical of him. And I spoke with Parse after practice today and, you know, asked him, is there any, you know, sort of nagging injuries that are out there that are, you know, holding you back? He said, absolutely not. Is it all between the ears for you right now? And his answer was very succinct. Yep. And there was a meeting that was scheduled to take place with Murray and Parse after practice today, after those interviews took place, and Murray wanted to get to the bottom of it. Murray came into camp also saying that Scott Parse was going to be given every opportunity to be the third-line right wing on that line with Clifford and with Stoll, and that he planned on playing him in every preseason game to give him an opportunity to work himself back into hockey shape and be ready for the season, considering that he was coming off that injury last year and where he missed essentially the entire year. The plan has changed. As of today, Murray announced that Scott Parse will be getting a rest tomorrow night in Kansas City against the Pittsburgh Penguins. So, you have to be a little bit worried if you're a Scott Parse fan about his longevity, the potential for his longevity with the team right now. He's not looking good. He needs to move his feet, and Murray's not happy with him. But moving on. So I gave you the reason number one, which would be that their third line last year was perhaps the best line against the San Jose Sharks. The other reason why that I would tend to disagree with you in terms of being overly worried is that to be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, there are certain components that you need, and the Kings finally have all of those components. They've had pieces of them over, you know, their history, their 40-plus years in the league, but they've never had all of them together at once. And those components would be pretty simple. You need a goaltender in terms of a starting goaltender, a guy that can win games for you, that can steal a game for you, and Jonathan Quick certainly is that. You need two top defensemen, and the Kings have that. And you could argue whether those would be Doughty and Johnson or whether it would be Doughty and maybe a guy like Willie Mitchell, or maybe Doughty and a Rob Scuderi, who's your defensive defenseman. But the point is they have two top-tier defensemen that they can match up against the other team's top line. And then you need strength down the middle, and you need two centers. Those are the five players that you need. You need two legit centers, two defensemen, and a goalie, and you build a team around that. And you can talk to, you know, former players, including, you know, Hall of Famer Marcel Dion, who was on Mayer's Manor about 2 years ago and talked about the exact same thing, about building a team around those five. And the Kings and the acquisition of Mike Richards finally have that second-line center. And that was really where they were exposed last year against the Sharks. The Kings ended up beating themselves. Everybody likes to talk about the fact that, you know, oh, they lost the series because they didn't have Kopitar. No, that's not actually true. Yes, they would have won the series if they had Kopitar. That's an easy argument. But to say they lost the series because they didn't have Kopitar is actually wrong. If you watch those six games with San Jose, the Kings were controlling that series, and they let the Sharks off the hook. They had a big collapse at home with, you know, a big lead, and they let them off the hook, and several of those games went to overtime. So the Kings were in those games. They had the opportunity to win even without Andre Kopitar. So you take that lineup, you subtract Michael Hanzus, who certainly was great defensively but didn't have the speed to be able to keep up with some of what the Sharks brought to the table. You subtract the Wayne Simmonds, and you add in Mike Richards, and you add in Simone Gagné. They're going to give you some offense, you know, up on the top two lines, and then you look down at the bottom two lines with the experience of an Ethan Morrow and the physicalness that he's going to bring. The Kings are doing just fine, and that's why they're a contender in the Western Conference.
You talk about Brad Richardson being kind of the rover guy who's, you know, can fill in some spots, and every team's going to have injuries. And you look at the two guys up on the top six, Justin Williams and Simone Gagné, odds are at some point in the season you're going to lose those guys for, you know, a stretch of time. Richardson's a guy, and Kyle Clifford is a guy who I like a lot as a young prospect. He's tough as nails, can do a little bit of everything. And as you said, took a step up in the playoffs. It was good to see. The guy we haven't really talked about yet, and I want to get your opinion on what's his status right now, is Loktionov. And is he a guy that is still in the mix as far as providing a little bit of scoring on that third line, or what is his status right now with the team, and where is he at as a prospect?
Yeah, we could have gone probably an hour just talking about the 12-plus players that are available on that third and fourth line. I mean, you know, other names just keep popping up. We're talking about Parse, and we've talked about Frazier and all these guys. And, yeah, Loktionov's another one. The challenge with Loktionov is this. He doesn't necessarily bring the versatility that some of the other players do. You have a winger who, you know, some of these wingers, they'll play left or right side. You have some centers like Richardson that can move. But when it comes to Loktionov, they tried. He's a natural center. He's all played center all his life. They tried moving him to wing last year. The experiment failed miserably. Loktionov wasn't happy. He didn't like it. He didn't feel comfortable. Coach Terry Murray wasn't happy with the results. And from that point forward, they have said repeatedly that Loktionov is going to play center. Well, by saying that, what you're also doing is limiting his opportunity to make the team this year. People tend to want to put the 12 best players on the ice as your forwards, and not really thinking about how you put people in boxes as a third line or a fourth line or a left wing or a center. And so where I'm going with that is that there really isn't a spot for Loktionov on this year's team. He's a skilled player. He needs to play with other skilled players. He's an offensive player. He can play on the power play. All those things said indicate that he's not a fourth line player. He's not going to play well. He's not going to be used in the optimal situation playing on the fourth line with a guy like Kevin Westgarth. who's out there. And it's not taking anything away from Westgaard. Everybody plays a role on a team, and we've seen that in sports, that when everybody knows their role, teams have success. And Kevin Westgaard knows that he doesn't belong up on the top line playing with Kopitar or with a guy like Dustin Penner. He knows his role, and he's committed to it. Loktionov is probably not going to make the Kings this year. He's having a great camp. Everybody's saying a lot of positive things. But the reality is, where are you going to play him? Because you could, but you're probably not doing him a service to his development by playing him fourth line minutes versus sending him back to Manchester, letting him play on the top line, letting him play 20 plus minutes a night and continuing to hone his craft. Remember, he's still a young player. He's still being developed. And it's not like it's the end of the road for Loktionov. He has looked nice at times in camp. There's no doubt about that. Jared Stoll's contract, he's your third-line center. He was playing as the second-line center last year, but he's being moved to the third line this year, which is probably definitely is a role that's more suited for him. His contract is due up at the end of the year, so that's going to be a tough challenge at the end of the season. Do you bring a guy like Stoll back? He's been nothing but money in the shootout for the team. He also is their best face-off guy, so it'd be a tough guy to lose. And I don't think anybody's hurrying him out the door. I'm just saying that in terms of where would Loktionov fit in either this year or in the future, there's that opportunity come next year, come next summer. That's gonna be a much tougher decision perhaps than it is this year, because do you roll the dice and go with a kid who hasn't played a lot of games at the National Hockey League level like Loktionov, or do you re-sign a veteran like Stoll? It's gonna be a tough decision, but I just don't see Loktionov making the team this year. You have Trevor Lewis there as your fourth line center. He has a year pro under him. He played well. He was tutored, if you will, by Michael Hanzus from a defensive perspective. They really worked on Lewis's defensive game. He's a very responsible now two-way forward, and they know what role they want Lewis to play. It's not going to be up on the top two lines. So given Lewis's defense, you probably are going to see Trevor Lewis at center on the fourth line, which again means that Loktionov just doesn't have a spot, unfortunately, on the team right now.
Back to Loktionov for a second. I just want to, because you talk about, you would say at this point he has NHL skill, he just doesn't have a position.
Loktionov?
Yeah.
He has NHL skill. The question is, does he have NHL size? That's always been the question. He does appear to be a little bit stronger. I talked with him earlier in camp about a week ago. He says he worked really hard on his shoulders. And building up his strength, which is what he knew he needed to do. He's had surgery on the shoulder. He's had some challenges injury-wise over the last couple seasons. And so, I would say the skill is definitely there. Does it mean that he should be number one or number two center, call it the lower third tier of the teams in the league? No, probably not. But could he crack the Kings lineup of 3 years ago? Yes, he would have. Just the Kings are deep right now. And like I said earlier, you can have him make the team, but what's the value to a guy at that stage of his development to let him play 6 minutes a night on the fourth line? It's probably a position thing, like you mentioned, more than it is a skill thing at this point.
Okay, I don't want to spend too much time on a guy that's going back to Manchester, but I just want to, with him, so there was this issue last year with Loktionov. He wanted to play center. He didn't want to play wing. He wasn't happy at wing. So he goes into the offseason, they bring in Mike Richards, he looks at it and sees that he doesn't have a place at center, and then he shows up in camp, and is it a situation where he still doesn't want to play wing?
He does not want to play wing. Asked him that very specific question. He doesn't want to play wing. He's more comfortable at center. His answer is simple. He's played center all of his life, and that's just where he feels comfortable. And regardless of what he wants to do, Coach Terry Murray is on record as well in camp here over the last 10 days or so, saying that he wants Loktionov to play center as well. So, the experiment to move him to wing has ended. Andre Loktionov is going to be a center when he finally makes the National Hockey League.
I don't want to get into too much about Mike Richards in the past. I think, the way the internet is, There's that often used phrase where there's smoke, there's fire, and I've heard, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard a lot of things about Mike Richards, but with the way information's passed now, it's hard to really say if any of it has any weight. You've been around Mike Richards. I mean, you know, where does he fit in this room? It's early. Everybody's getting along. But do you see, and I guess the follow-up question, who are the real leaders on this Kings team as we head into the season?
Yeah, well, you know, you loaded a couple of questions in there. In terms of who the leaders are, the room has a number of different leaders, and it's not just the guys that wear letters. You know, Dustin Brown is a different type of leader compared to maybe a Chris Pronger, right? But Dustin Brown certainly is a leader on that team. He's the captain of the team. You know, over on the defensive side of things, Matt Green is a vocal leader, and virtually every guy there on the defense plays some sort of a leadership role. Doughty brings a degree of leadership, especially what he brings on the ice. Willie Mitchell, as a veteran, has a voice in the room as well. You know, you haven't yet seen, for obvious reasons, we're only two games into preseason, but we haven't yet seen what an Ethan Morrow can do and what a Mike Richards can do in terms of leadership. But these are guys that are former captains, with Richards in Philadelphia and Morrow, a longtime captain there of the Edmonton Oilers. So, you know, these are guys that understand when to speak up, what to say, you know, and when to say it, and that sort of thing. So this team does not lack for leadership. Simone Gagné as well has worn a letter, you know, in his career, and you just go around the room, there's plenty of leadership. It's definitely something that this team doesn't lack, you know, so that's a good thing. In terms of the past, you know, I would just say this about Mike Richards, and this is the same thing that I've said and written all summer. You're right. You don't know what's out there or what's true that's out there. There's a lot of information out there, and that's almost one of the problems with the Internet, is anybody can say anything they want, and very quickly with the right number of clicks and links, it can become almost truth or perceived as truth. This is what I'll say about Mike Richards. When that trade was made, the first person I picked up the phone and called was Ian LaPerriere. If there's one thing that I've come to know in the game of hockey, it's that Ian LaPerriere is one of the most honest people you will ever meet, not only in the game, but in life. And if he tells you something, it's a fact, period, point blank. He will speak his mind, and he will tell you exactly what's going on in any situation, even if it's with the current teammate or with the former teammate. And, you know, you go back to a podcast that I did with Lappy a number of years ago, and, you know, he was very honest about his relationship or his feelings towards Sean Avery and other players around the league. And I would encourage anybody who's a Flyers fan or a Kings fan or even an Ian LaPerriere fan or maybe a Sean Avery fan too to go and listen to that podcast. It's on the podcast tab on mayorsmanner.com. But when I called Lappy, the reason I called him is I wanted to know, forget what the writers are writing, forget what the fans are saying, forget what people are saying. Here's a guy who was in the room. And the only people that really know what goes on inside of a locker room, it's not even the media when we go in there and ask questions. It's the players. It's the players. It's the guys that are traveling with those guys. It's the guys that are, you know, going out to dinner and spending time with the players on the road. I called Lappy, and basically Lappy gave him, thumbs up and says that this is the kind of guy that you want to have on your team, and that he had nothing but good things to say about Mike Richards and didn't believe anything that was out there. And I encourage people to go and read that interview as well. But what I'm trying to say here is that when I call Lappy and when he says that he's a stand-up guy and that the Kings picked up a great player in Mike Richards on and off the ice, that's good enough for me. I don't really care to read or talk about what anybody else out there has to say. I've since that time, I've spoken with several of his other former teammates, including Simone Gagné, who is now here in Los Angeles, who said the exact same thing, and it was the quote that I used in the headline after speaking with Gagné. Mike Richards is the type of guy that I want to have on my team. That's the quote from Gagné. So, who knows? Who cares? Turn the page. It's time to move forward. Mike Richards is a winner. He's been a winner everywhere he's gone. He won a Memorial Cup when he was playing junior hockey. He won at the AHL level. He won a gold medal with Team Canada. The Kings finally have a legitimate number two center, and here's a guy who's in the prime of his career. He's 26 years old. He's locked up long term. He's a former captain. He can come in here without the pressure of playing under the Philadelphia media and all the drama and nonsense that happens on the East Coast. He can come in here and do what he does best, which is play hockey. And Mike Richards is going to be a perfectly fine citizen in Los Angeles, and Dean Lombardi would not have gone out and acquired a guy like Mike Richards without doing the proper due diligence. Dean Lombardi, as I said, quite some time back here in this interview, he has been insistent from day one about building a team that's centered on character. And believe me, he checked out the character of Mike Richards, and there's a reason why Mike Richards is in Los Angeles right now, and that's because he's the exact type of player that Dean Lombardi wants in that locker room.
Quickly here, I want to presumably Mike Richards and Simone Gagné are going to be on the same line to start the season. What does the top six look like as far as the line combinations?
You're absolutely right. He's going to play on the second line. Richards centers the second line with Simone Gagné on his left side, and right now he has Dustin Brown on his right side. The top line is Kopitar, of course, at center, and Dustin Penner over on the left side and Justin Williams on the right side. It is worth noting that Murray historically talks about making pairs, not lines. So in the sense of what we're talking about here, his pair is Kopitar and Penner, and his second pair is Gagné and Richards, and he said he planned on rotating Justin Williams and Dustin Brown over on the right side. That's just the way that Terry Murray likes to coach. An interesting little nugget coming out of practice today was kind of an extension of some comments that Murray made after the game last night. And he was talking a lot about team chemistry. And I'm going to be writing about this tomorrow on mayorsmanner.com. It's starting to sound more like Murray is going to be juggling lines, perhaps just a little bit less, especially here in the early part of the season. He's really talking a lot about chemistry and wanting to see more of that from those players. So at least in the short term, we can expect to see those top two lines staying together with, you know, Penner, Kopitar, and Williams on the top line, and Gagné, Richards, and Brown on the second line.
Kings, you know, on the road a bit, you know, obviously starting overseas, and then they come back. They're on the East Coast, and not a lot of home cooking early on. Let's just say 2 months into the season, the Kings are struggling. How's Terry Murray's relationship with Dean Lombardi? Solid enough that his job would that's not a place Dean Lombardi would go, whether it would be November, January, or even, you know, the beginning of March if the team is struggling?
It's not a place that Dean Lombardi is going to go. If he was ever going to go there, he had the perfect opportunity last year with two horrible losing streaks. He backed his coach, Terry Murray, and at the end of the season, in the postseason kind of exit interviews with the media, Lombardi went as far as to say that he thought that Terry Murray's coaching job last season was his finest hour, you know, as a coach. The calm and the patience that he showed during those losing streaks really impressed Lombardi. He liked the fact that, you know, Murray wasn't losing his cool and wasn't making knee-jerk reactions in terms of the lineup, and that he thought that it was Murray that helped them weather the storm and get the ship headed back in the right direction there in the second half of the season. So, no, I'd be very surprised to see him make a move, especially in season with Coach Terry Murray. They have a long relationship going back to their days with the Flyers. He has a tremendous amount of respect for Murray. Murray has a good pulse, you know, of the team and of the players individually and collectively. So I'd be very surprised to see that. And hopefully it's not something that either Murray, Lombardi, or fans of the LA Kings are going to have to worry about this season. Hopefully they can get out of the gate strong. Last year, you know, they opened up. They were one of the top teams in the Western Conference there in the first month of the season. Hopefully they can get out to that type of a start again and then be able to maintain it this time and not go through the losing streak that they did, you know, last year. They need everything to fall into place, of course, to be number one in the West, but there's no reason to believe that this team should not be challenging for the Pacific Division.
Absolutely. The Kings are a lot of fun to watch. Before we wrap, if you, I want to get your thoughts, maybe, you know, a couple of teams, maybe the team that you're looking at the most in the Pacific Division and then in the Western Conference at large. Who are the teams that you're looking at this year that maybe a surprise team that are going to be the top contenders or, you know, teams to be reckoned with in the Western Conference?
You know, I'm not sure if there really is going to be a surprise team in the West. I mean, you can kind of go through it, and I think you would find that most people would tend to agree on who the top echelon teams are, the middle teams, and then kind of the bottom teams. You know, down at the bottom, you have the Edmonton Oilers, you have the Colorado Avalanche. Phoenix has probably dropped off quite a bit, you know, with the loss of the goaltender there. Minnesota's a little bit of a wild card because they did make a lot of changes. They traded for half the San Jose Sharks. But, you know, did they do enough to get into a playoff spot? I would argue probably not. Up at the top of the conference, you know, you have, of course, you have Vancouver, who will more than likely repeat as, you know, the number one seed out of the West simply because they play in such a weak division. So they should pile up some easy points. They're going to be without Kessler and Raymond to start the season. That'll be a challenge for them and could give another team an opportunity to challenge for the number one spot. You know, you have the Kings and the Sharks in the Pacific as the only two real legitimate threats. Dallas, you know, they have Brendan Morrow. You can never count a team out that has a guy like that with his tremendous heart. They made a lot of moves in the offseason, but they did lose Brad Richards. That's a big hole to fill. You know, he's your top center. You know, we talked about Phoenix. Anaheim's a little bit of a wild card. I say that their season is dependent upon a stack of ifs. And what I mean by that is they're going to have a good season if Hiller can come back from the injury and he's fine and he can play back up to his normal levels. They're gonna have a good season if they can find a way to patch that defense together. You know, they really don't have the Doughty and Johnson combination. They have kind of a team of second pair, you know, a team of 3-4 defensemen more than they have anything else. I mean, Cam Fowler might develop into something nice, but as of right now, you wouldn't consider him to be the, you know, a number one defenseman in a group of six. Another if for the Anaheim Ducks is going to be Corey Perry. If he comes back and plays at the same level that he played last year, you know, obviously MVP of the league, that's a big if, though. You know, there are a lot of ifs on that team, and they cannot play at the same level they played in the second half, or people should not expect them to play at the same level they played in the second half. That was just an unbelievable, you know, run there, similar to what happened with the St. Louis Blues a number of years ago. And they had that incredible second-half run. They make it into the playoffs, and then, you know, they just never really were able to get back to that level again. So that leaves San Jose. And you know, for my money, I really don't like the moves that the Sharks made. I don't understand them, not only from a current standpoint, but also going forward. I think that giving up a guy like Charlie Coyle, who is, you know, in my opinion, is going to end up being a better prospect than a guy like Braden Schenn. I think that Coyle was a top-tier prospect at center, and they really are going to miss him in the future. And I'm not sold on Burns as a defenseman. I've just never been a believer in teams going out and getting the best player on the worst team, whether you're talking about baseball or in hockey. And, you know, they gave him a lot of money, and they gave up a lot to get him. So I think that from that standpoint, the Kings are poised to win the division, not only because of the moves the Kings made, but also because of the moves that San Jose made. And then, of course, you know, when you're talking about the three seed there or the other, you know, top seed there in the West, you can't forget about Chicago. You can't forget about Detroit. More than likely, I would say Chicago has put their Stanley Cup hangover behind them, all those roster changes, all those guys that they had to, you know, assimilate into the team last year. A lot of that has happened. It's taken place. And you know, wouldn't surprise me at all to see the Blackhawks back at the top of the West again. You never can count out the Detroit Red Wings. It doesn't matter how old they are. And then you get into that middle bunch. And when you get to teams kind of 6 through 10, you can interchange any of those teams. The Calgary Flames, they're a bubble team. They could finish 6th. They could finish 10th. You know, did they really do anything to make themselves that much better? I think not. St. Louis Blues, same thing. They should be a little bit better because they were depleted by injuries last season. They brought some veteran guys in. You know, they do have Halak in net. You can't ever discount having a hot goalie. If he could rebound and get back to where he was in Montreal, St. Louis could be in the mix, you know, as one of those bubble teams. Dallas, we talked about. Who are we missing there out of that bunch?
Nashville.
Nashville. You know, they seem to sneak up on you every year. People don't talk about them in the preseason, other than to say, oh yeah, they'll make the playoffs because they do. They do it, you know, and they sneak in there every year, and they have a good coach in Barry Trotz. They did go out and make a trade there at the deadline last year to add some offense. They lost Steve Sullivan to Pittsburgh. You know, Nashville is going to hang around as well. So there's a glut of teams that are there in that 6 through 10 spot. That's my take on the Western Conference, painting very quickly with a broad brush.
All right, Mayor, this was fantastic. And again, for you Twitterers, twitter.com/MayorNHL and then on Facebook /Mayor's Manor and of course mayorsmanor.com. I don't just say this because you're on the show. If you follow the Kings, if you're interested in the Kings, there's 3 or 4 essential stops every day for you know, to follow the Kings and to be up on what's going on. One of them is mayorsmanor.com. Mayorsmanor.com. Getting your handles all screwed up. Mayorsmanor.com. And Mayor, thanks again. It's always fun to talk to you, and looking forward to doing it again. Maybe we'll get together during the season.
Yeah, the Kings play the Hawks a few times this year, so I would love to come back on and talk hockey with you guys. Appreciate your time, and hopefully everybody will check out mayorsmanor.com.
All right, thanks. I will be back later this week talking Blackhawks with Sam Fells, SecondCityHockey.com, and the Committed Indian, and NBC's Madhouse Enforcer. Everybody, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Good night, everybody.
Baby.